You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program that puts its money where its fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. Let's rock and roll. We've got some football to break down, some CFL football, which means you can play this stuff over at DraftKings, although the Canadian Football League is a tricky league. We tell you to basically just lock in on Calgary when you get an opportunity to and stack the Calgary Stampeder players because they have the most explosive offense in the CFL by far. We're breaking it down with Ian Cameron, a.k.a. Babano, sportsmemo.com, sbrpicks.com. Babano will join us. We'll try to hit all four Canadian Football League games on the board this week. We've had 2 weeks of CFL play. It's amazing, man. It felt like it was just 10 minutes ago that we were talking about CFL kickoff. Eight games, eight underdogs have covered the point spread. That's right. Underdogs are 8-0 ATS thus far through 2 weeks of CFL play. We kickstart week three tonight with the BC Lions and the Montreal Alouettes. I'm looking forward to tonight's football game, and I'm looking forward to the start of the National Football League regular season as well. Guys in the booth, I know it's a little late today, but starting tomorrow, let's get the countdown going. Let's get the countdown. It's 63 days right now. 63. So tomorrow will be 62. We're getting there, man. We're getting there. The start of the regular season is around the corner. Camps are set to open. Preseason's rapidly approaching. It's a great time right now. It's a great time. So we're going to be talking NFL football on the program today. As you can see, I'm rocking the L.A. Chargers jersey. Not San Diego. You know, it kind of sucks. Now reality is starting to kick in that they're not in San Diego anymore. I've been to Charger games in San Diego. San Diego's a beautiful city, man. I've always stated if I ever owe like a bookie a ton of money, I shouldn't just said this because I've lost my spot. But that's going to be my witness protection program spot. Like if I ever get in like a lot of trouble and I disappear, look for me in San Diego. I'll be like wearing a hat. I'll grow a beard and stuff like that. And I'll just be sitting there in Mission Viejo. Or I'll be on like Mission Beach or something like that. Just kicking it. Very, very tranquil town, San Diego. It's like a stereotype, too. You know, a lot of cliches are true and stereotypes are true. The first thing I saw in San Diego, I got to San Diego. I'm standing on the street. First thing I see is like four blonde dudes that look like Uriah Faber carrying surfboards. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Like, it's like, really? It's like, you know, people think all Canadians live in igloos. And I guess we think, you know, they're all blonde surfer dudes. I guess they are. A lot of hot chicks in San Diego, too. But they didn't have a new football stadium in San Diego. So now their team's in L.A. And we're going to be breaking that down on the program today. This division, man, it's so tight. It's so tight. It's going to be jammed at the top at the end of the year. A lot of tiebreakers are going to come into play in the NFL this year, I think, specifically in the AFC West. Yeah, the Raiders are the team to beat, but they're really not that much better than anybody else. And, you know, the Chargers, for a 5-11 football team, they actually don't blow. So we're going to talk some Charger football. Fred Lynn's going to join us. Fred Lynn, you know, growing up, actually, I used to watch Boston Red Sox baseball games. This is like forget about the internet. This is like, you know, pre-remote control days. I used to have the little black and white. And, you know, I remember Channel U, VHF or UHF or whatever the hell it was, with the rabbit ears and stuff. I used to pick up, I think it was WVNY or whatever the hell it was. I think it was out of Vermont. And I get Red Sox games. I get like an Expo game once a week. We get the Saturday baseball NBC game of the week. And I get a couple of Red Sox games every now and then. So I grew up watching Fred Lynn, a hell of a center fielder. And, you know, I was actually wondering, how come Fred Lynn's not in the Hall of Fame? Well, he got hurt a lot and his numbers just aren't quite there. And it's funny, you look at other Hall of Fames in other leagues, specifically hockey, they'll put you in. They're like, yeah, Cam Neely's numbers aren't, you know, but right now our boy Reed in the booth's like, what? He said, who? Cam Neely? Well, better be careful, Morenci. I've taken a lot of pot shots at Reed. But if I stood here and said that Cam Neely absolutely positively does not belong in the Hall of Fame and is so overrated and so overhyped, I think Reed might run down the hallway and assault me on television right now. I'm waiting. But I like Cam Neely. Cam Neely was not overrated. Cam Neely's career was ruined by that son of a bitch, Ulf Samuelsson. But, you know, they put him in. Because they're like, yeah, he got hurt, but yeah, you know, he would have put up those numbers. Baseball's a cold world. Fred Lynn would have been a Hall of Famer, but he got hurt a little bit too much because the guy played hard. He ran through walls, man. All right, so I'm fired up talking some baseball with Fred Lynn. We got a jam-packed show. So the dust is starting to settle after an insane free agent feeding frenzy. This was like Black Friday or something like that, man. And there was a bunch of nut jobs outside of a Walmart beating each other up, you know, hitting each other over the head with umbrellas and stuff like that. NBA GMs went loco. Seriously, it was like Christmas Eve, man, and they were going to take whatever they could freaking get. And when the dust is all settled, you know, the media and the feds, we were all very impressed, man. We jumped like trained seals at SeaWorld every time there was a report. Oh, my God, D'Angelo Russell went to the Nets. Oh, my God, Chris Paul went to the Rockets. Oh, my God, Paul George is on Oklahoma City. Gordon Hayward signed with Boston. And when it's all said and done, does it really matter? No. It's pretty much like reshuffling the chairs on the deck of that Titanic. Yeah, that'll save us. When it's all said and done, the odds makers were not impressed. The media was. The fans were. The commissioner is. And I'll tell you what, it's going to be a really entertaining and fun regular season next year in the association. Man, I really, you know, love the NBA. It's a fun league. The regular season's going to be really cool. And you know what you're going to hear the line you're going to hear most next year in the NBA? This is his first trip back. That's every night. And the league loves that because it's big drama. Oh, on Tuesday night, and the Rockets go back to Los Angeles, and it's Chris Paul versus Blake Griffin. Ooh, the Oklahoma City Thunder in Indiana, and they're going to boo Paul George. Ooh, when does Boston go to Utah so they can burn more jerseys? The league loves this type of stuff. The player movement. Well, when it was all said and done, the odds makers were unimpressed. Nothing changed. And if anything, the Golden State Warriors are bigger favorites right now. Warriors were already minus 150 favorites to win before this process began and everybody got crazy and reloaded. Well, I'll tell you what they are right now. It's like, all right, let's see what they are now after all of this. They're minus 160. They're bigger favorites right now. What about in the East? Are the Cleveland Cavaliers vulnerable? Oddsmakers don't think so. They're minus 180 favorites to repeat and go back to the finals again. And again and again and again. Now, the Boston Celtics, a lot of people have thought sort of closed ground on them. Have they? You know, have they? I don't know. The odds makers disagree. Either way, next year's NBA regular season is going to be a hell of a lot of fun. I do think the Cavaliers are somewhat vulnerable, but the East is pretty beaten down right now. But Boston can play. The Raptors can play. The Milwaukee Bucks are knocking on the door. The Wizards are a dangerous team. But you know, you'd be hard-pressed to say that, yeah, Cleveland still aren't the team to beat in the East. But when it's all said and done, the biggest winners to me, actually, our teams are going to win the championship, but the Oklahoma City Thunder, all right? Just 1 year after losing Kevin Durant, their GM's able to pull it off and bring in a mega superstar in Paul George. Is Paul George going to leave again after the year? Yeah, probably. But if you're Oklahoma City, it's a hell of a lot better to have Paul George and Westbrook together for a year. And the biggest winners of them all, the Sacramento Kings. And I told you guys, I love what the Kings did at the draft. And I like what they did even more with free agency. Are you kidding me? George Hill is a Sacramento King. Are you kidding me? Zach Randolph is a Sacramento King. And they picked up De'Aaron Fox as well. And you got Buddy Hield. This is a team going in the right direction. It sucks for them that the West is so loaded. But to me, Sacramento fans are the biggest winners in the league right now. They went from being a pile of steaming crap with a clueless general manager and arguably like the least desirable team in professional sports to actually play for to actually being a team that's going to compete for a playoff spot. I'm fired up for football, man, but you know what? 2017/18 NBA season is going to be pretty freaking cool as well. Game time decision continues.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things. Just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenz. We've got a great show lined up for you today. We're going to talk some CFL football with Ian Cameron, a.k.a. Babano from SBRPicks.com and SportsMemo.com. The great Fred Lynn will join us, one of the greatest center fielders ever to play the game, nine-time All-Star Fred Lynn. We'll talk some baseball with Freddie Lynn. We'll talk some NFL football. My NFL team-by-team previews continues. We'll talk some L.A. Superchargers, but it can't be. You need a new song now. I'm very disappointed about this, but we'll get to that a little bit later on. But without further ado, man, let's talk some CFL football right now. It's hard to believe we're already into week three, and it's even harder to believe that the underdogs are 8-0 against the spread. The Riders actually closed as small favorites last week, and their field goal kicker screwed up again 2 weeks in a row. You can make an argument that the Riders actually should be a 2-0 football team right now, but nevertheless, underdogs are 8-0 against this spread, and after eight games, we've got five unders, three overs, and we should note something very interesting. If you're betting first half, second half, most of these CFL games are going under the number in the first half with the exception of the Ottawa and the Calgary games. Interesting stat, 30% of the CFL league's points so far through 2 weeks have been scored in the fourth quarter. Let's bring in a man who's been watching it all. Ian Cameron, a.k.a. Babano, joins us from the backyard barbecue. What's going on, Babano?
Yeah, it's great. I do some of my best capping and thinking here in the summer sun outdoors in the backyard. And I'll tell you what, right now, something's wrong with this picture. We're Canadian. We're talking Canadian Football League. I got an American T-shirt on. So something's wrong. What's wrong with this picture? But I did it for July 4th week to appease our American viewers. Hello to all of you out there.
Well, at least you moved your marijuana plants out of camera's view.
What marijuana plants? Shh.
I can't
bring that up.
At first, I couldn't tell. I'm like, kind of looks like the Yankees monument. You got the nice, you got the wall going. I'm like, man, is he joining us from a cemetery? Where is this guy? But yeah, looking good, Babano. All right. So as I stated, underdogs are 8-0. We've had some line movement. You don't often see a ton of line movement in the CFL on game day, going back and forth. But the BC Lions have been 3-point favorites, then 3.5, and then back to three and a half. It's just sort of bouncing back and forth all day. I was intrigued by the Owls at 3.5. I'm still intrigued by the Owls at 3. The CFL is in a logical league. You almost have to erase what you've seen on the previous week. But with that being stated, I was very impressed with the Alouettes' defeat last week against Edmonton. They played a much more competitive football game than I thought they would. It's evident their defense is for real. Again, the defense is rock solid, man. They've only given up 39 points in two football games, which is damn impressive. But they're only scoring 18 points per game. I think the offense will start to get it going a little bit as the season progresses. And BC have historically struggled on the East Coast. They won against Toronto last Friday night. Now they've got to get it done 6 nights later. It's a leap of faith, but I believe that the Alouettes are the play tonight.
Yeah, it's good two-way action, Morenci, on this game. We saw BC take early money. Montreal's gotten some buyback once BC got up to a 3.5-point road favorite in this game. And the spot probably is a little bit in Montreal's favor. They're back home after a tough competitive loss to the Edmonton Eskimos last week. But I've got concerns, Gabe, about this offense still. Darian Durant does not look like the guy he was 3-4 years ago through two games. Now, it's understandable, new offense, getting used to Jacques Chapdelaine and this Alouettes team, but I've seen two games now with Montreal. He's missed wide open receivers. He has not looked sharp at times, and let's be honest, the points they put up against Edmonton last week, largely turnover related. Edmonton turned the ball over deep in their own territory twice early in that game, which led to points for the Montreal Alouettes. Other than that, they really didn't move the football up and down the field at will against Edmonton. That offense is going to have to improve. Just 2 touchdowns scored in 3 games. That's not nearly good enough. We'll see if they can do it here against a very good BC defense, especially up front. I think BC secondary a little bit vulnerable, but up front they can get pressure, and that's going to be key. Durant's going to have to get protection from his O-line tonight and also open up holes for Jarrell
Sutton. Well, they haven't given up a sack yet. He hasn't been sacked yet in two games, the Alouettes. Actually, it's been years since the team hasn't given up a sack in the first two games, but that's one bright spot for the Alouettes. Although it's hard to give up a sack when you're dinking and dunking and get rid of the football as quickly as he is all the time. You know, the Alouettes aren't throwing the football down the field. All right, Babana, we want to get to all the games, so who do you like tonight?
I lay 2.5 with BC. They stayed out east. They did not fly back to Vancouver. They were staying in Kingston all week in between the Toronto and Montreal game. I think that bodes well for them. And hey, I've still gotten my power ratings. BC is the better team. If I can lay less than a field goal, I'm going to do it.
Yeah, I spent a month in Kingston one night. Just kidding. glamorous life in the Canadian Football League.
Hey, at least we're keeping them. At least Wally Buono was keeping them out of trouble.
Hey guys,
you can't get in much trouble in Kingston, can you? Yeah.
No, you can get in trouble anywhere. There's bars in Kingston. I'm just kidding. Kingston's a beautiful, beautiful city. Beautiful city.
The Thousand Islands are there, Gananoque.
I believe it's a home of John A. McDonald, right? First ever prime minister. All right.
There's your Canadian history lesson for the show. Don't expect any more.
Exactly. All right. So Stampeders and Bombers. The Stampeders have to feel good about this because I'm sure they're sick of playing the Red Blacks. It's amazing. They played the Red Blacks in the Grey Cup, then they played the Red Blacks in the season opener, and then they played the Red Blacks again last week. Three consecutive games against the same freaking football team. Like, they haven't game planned against anybody else, like, since last November. Like, seriously, they haven't game planned for another team for real since last November. So I'm sure the Stampeder players are going to be happy they're getting a new bunch here. The Bombers came on in the second half of that game. It was impressive. You know, they were kind of out of sync early, but it was they had a bye in week one. Now the Stampeders are laying 3.5 points here. This is a tricky game. Even when the Bombers have been bad, they've always played the Stamps tough, and there's been a lot of close Friday night games between these two over the years.
Going to be a fun game, I think, on Friday night. And here's the issue with Calgary. I don't want to jump to conclusions after two games against good Ottawa offense. This isn't the same Calgary defense, but they've got issues. I mean, this has not been a Stampeder defense that has played well against the pass. Their secondary's been torched multiple times in the first 2 weeks of the season. And that's kind of strange because they got Tommy Campbell, Siante Evans, Jamar Wall, a very good secondary, a lot of good players in that group, but they've struggled in pass coverage so far, and now the pass rush is a concern going into this game against Winnipeg. They already lost Cordero Law to a season-ending injury in training camp, and now Charleston Hughes, one of the leaders in sacks in the CFL for years, he's not going to play in this game, Gabe, due to injury for the Calgary Stampeders. Where is the pass rush, and where is the pressure going to come from now for this Calgary team against Matt Nichols, who played very well against Saskatchewan on the road, especially in the second half? They really got that offense going. Very impressed with the Darvin Adams in that game. Weston Dressler had a huge game. LaDainian Washington looks like could be a good receiver for Winnipeg. Calgary gets Tavares Daniels back at receiver this week, makes an even a good receiving core even more deeper with his return from injury. So it should be a fun game and should see some points in this one.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. The Calgary Stampeder, well, we'll see. Is Ottawa's offense that good? Or was Calgary's secondary that shaky? But through 2 weeks, you know, they have been very shaky. It's a good thing that the Stampeders have scored 74 points, the most in the CFL through 2 weeks, because the defense has been very leaky. Little dump plays turn into big plays. The secondary is very, very shaky. I think the Bombers should be able to take advantage of that.
And a nice little side note about this game, two former Eastern Washington teammates going at it, Matt Nichols and Bo Levi Mitchell. Bo Levi Mitchell took over the starting quarterback job at EWU from Matt Nichols. So good friends, and they'll be going at it here.
Interesting, yeah, interesting connections. Yeah, the Eastern Washington's been a big pipeline. Of course, Vernon Adams, another Eastern Washington. Basically, you know, like if you go to Alabama, Saban tells you, listen, kid, I'm going to get you in the NFL, son. You go to Eastern Washington, they're like, listen, you want to play in the CFL? Nobody develops CFL quarterbacks like we do at Eastern Washington. All right, so speaking of the Red Blacks have been very impressive. You know, they tied the first game as six-point underdogs. Then they competed last week. They went back and forth. Very, very thrilling, entertaining game once again against Calgary. Calgary was due to finally beat these guys. But it's amazing to me. The Red Blacks just don't get a lot of respect from the odds makers or the betting public ever. You know, going back to the Grey Cup and getting to 9 points, getting 6 points on their home field in week one. Last week, 8.5, 9, whatever it closed at, on the road. And here they are right now. They're laying 4 points against the Toronto Argonaut team that looked terrible last week. But the Argos did look good in week one. But I'm just surprised, actually, because Ottawa have established themselves. They're the defending champions. They're showing that they're going toe-to-toe with the supposed beast of the league in the Calgary Stampeders every week. Ottawa have proven themselves to be a good football team. We don't know who Toronto are right now. I'm surprised the point spread wasn't higher than 4.
This is where we're going to find out just how far along Mark Trestman's come along with this team, because this is going to be their first road game of the season, a good week one win against Hamilton, and let's be honest, pretty impressive in defeat against BC. They led that game going into the fourth quarter last week against the Lions, and then BC was able to take over and dominate the fourth quarter on both sides of the ball, and a key turnover for Toronto.
Yeah, Argo's defense was good last week, but the offense wasn't.
No, it wasn't, but Ottawa's defense has had a ton of problems. I mean, and they've got cluster injuries now on that defense. Jerron Kreiner at receiver is not going to play for Ottawa in this game. Nolan McMillan along the offensive line may not suit up for Ottawa. So there's some injuries piling up after that two-game intense, thrilling affair in back-to-back weeks with Calgary. Not only is it maybe a little bit of a letdown here for Ottawa, but these injuries do concern me a little bit. I'll be honest, I thought Toronto was appealing at the opener. Grabbed a little Argonauts plus the points. It's getting down there now. I'd be a little bit cautious now. But Toronto is giving you good effort, good, well-prepared every week in the first 2 weeks of this season. And I think, you know, they have a chance to hang around. Just not sure Ottawa in a great spot here on Saturday night.
The total's 55.5 in this football game. Feels a little bit high considering the unknown variables. Like you said, it's the Argos' first road game. But it might give him a shot in the arm. You know, there's going to be about 6 or 7 times more people at this one football game than they've gotten in their first two football games. This will be the first time they played in front of people, actually, this year. Sometimes it's a shot in the arm, even if you're on the road. So then we got the Ticats. Ticats were brutal in week one. They got Zach Collaros back, and, you know, that was the big thing. You know, Collaros was just wrecking the league before he got hurt. The Ticats offense has been lethal in the past with Zach Collaros on the field, but he really doesn't have a lot of weapons to work with. You know, running backs aren't all that impactful. Gable's a good player, but he doesn't have that much impact on a game. Banks is more of a return guy. Tolliver got hurt. Tasker's okay. You know, I thought Hamilton were going to be better than they were. I'll cut them a little slack. They look bad in the first week. Then they get a bye week. Now they go back to the Riders. Like we said, the Riders deserve better. The Riders could be 2-0 right now.
I don't know what to do with this game besides watch it. That's probably all I'm going to do. It's funny because Saskatchewan, I can't lay points with a team that's found ways to lose each of the first 2 weeks. With kicking game issues, we know Tyler Kropinia in the first 2 weeks. He's been good, but he's missed bad kicks at the wrong time, at the worst time, and that's been a problem for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. Kevin Glenn's good for a mistake or two a game. Give him credit. He rallied them back to tie that game before losing in overtime last week. But his interception before halftime, unforgivable. It's what changed the momentum of that football game in Winnipeg's favor. He had complete control of that game, and you can't throw an interception over the middle of the field with no Saskatchewan receiver in sight. There was nobody in green. None, zero, within proximity of that football when Kevin Glenn threw it. It changed the momentum of that game. Winnipeg comes back, takes the big lead. Saskatchewan rallies but falls short. They just find ways to lose games. And Chris Jones, a defensive guru, I'm starting to think that moniker is a little overrated. His defense didn't play well last year, didn't play well last week. I have a tough time backing Saskatchewan here, but at the same time, I have no idea what to expect from Hamilton. They're shuffling in new receivers. They're making a change at running back. The offensive line is making some changes. The secondary is not going to get any of their injured parts back, and that's a secondary that Ricky Ray tore apart in week one. I don't want Hamilton either, so this is going to be a game I'll probably just sit back, watch, and have some fun in observing.
Yeah, I think the Riders will get it done in this spot, but there's no guarantees. There's no guarantees in this league at any point, or in any football league for that matter, but Saskatchewan deserves better. You got to figure eventually they'll fall ass backwards into a win.
Hamilton 1-4 straight up and against the spread last 5 trips to Saskatchewan. It's been a tough place for them over the years.
Yeah, you know, and you can't simplify it, but like I said about the Lions earlier, the Lions don't win in Montreal. I mean, the teams don't travel well in the CFL. And it's not like home field is over.
I got to correct you there. BC's won the last two in Montreal, so I got to correct you there.
Yeah, the last, yeah, big deal. They've been playing the battle for the last 48 years. You know what I mean? Look at their overall record in Montreal.
Well, since Jennings has been there, yeah. Since Jennings has been the quarterback, they've done better.
Yeah, well, the Alouettes have been terrible the last 2 years.
Well, they haven't been great in 2 weeks, as far as I'm concerned.
They're 1-1. The last two years, the Alouettes have been a train wreck. The Alouettes, the thing is, too, with the CFL, these games are meaningless. Like, everybody makes the playoffs, and people can freak, oh, this team is offense, their defense, this. Nobody cares. You know what I mean? Like, talk to us in October or November, you know, nobody's going to remember, basically. Like, you got to be basically terrible not to make the playoffs, and then anything can happen in the league.
18 weeks when you're basically playing for exercise, because, hey, playoffs are still a pretty good shot for us in the end.
Yeah, as they say, the CFL games don't start to count until after Labor Day. Check out Babano's picks at sportsmemo.com, sbrpicks.com. Always a pleasure, Babano. Ian Cameron with us. All right, we'll take a quick break. Fred Lynn's going to step up, and we're going to kick it old school. I want to talk about this All-Star game, get his perspective from a guy that played in 9 All-Star games. And the Home Run Derby matchups have been set, actually, as well. So that's going to be pretty cool. I can't wait to get you guys some numbers. We'll start breaking that down. Hopefully we have that for the radio show tonight.
Quarterback to receiver hookups, running back depth analysis, rookie values in dynasty leagues, deep sleepers, training camp battles. These are just a few of the in-depth features you will find inside the 2017 RotoExperts.com Exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package. And it's power-packed with so much more, including fully sortable player projections and a custom cheat sheet generator. Plus, you get a full year of in-season coverage as a bonus. Get the Exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package now at rotoexperts.com. Enter free radio at checkout for your special discount.
Game time decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. You know what else continues? Talking to great baseball guests. As yesterday, we were lucky to have Tim Wallach on the program. And how about the Marlins, man? They won again. See, we brought the Marlins luck. Unfortunately, I didn't think they were going to win, and I told you the Cardinals would win, but I'm not going to tell you the Cardinals are going to win ever again because they don't ever win, okay? But that's a whole other story. We'll get to our plays of the day a little bit later on. We'll talk some Charger football in a couple of minutes, but let's actually send it to San Diego, ironically enough, on the day that we're talking L.A. Charger football. We're sending it to a 9-time All-Star, a former AL MVP, former Rookie of the Year, AL Championship Series MVP, a batting champion. You know, we can go on and on, but we don't have enough time to go through this man's resume. But a player that I watched growing up and one of the best center fielders to ever run around out there, Fred Lynn joins us. Fred, it's always a pleasure, my man. How you doing?
I'm doing really well. You know, it's All-Star time, so this is when I like to play.
Yeah, I tell you what, 9 All-Star appearances. So we'll talk some Red Sox baseball in a couple of minutes, but this one I wanted to focus in on the All-Star game. And I actually saw you at the All-Star game live, but I'll get to that in a moment. Home field advantage for the World Series was given after 2002, after the infamous tie. And Bud Selig felt embarrassed by it. So he said, all right, whoever wins the All-Star game gets home field in the World Series. What was your take on that when it happened? And now it's the first year they've revoked that. So the All-Star game does not count for a home field advantage right now. What was your take then and now on that?
My take then, that it was a mistake to put that label on the All-Star game. Basically, in my day, it was an honor to play, and you played for pride of your league, and you wanted to win. You didn't need home field advantage for a team that you might not play on in the World Series to be a caveat for you winning this game. So it should be the team that busts his butt for 162 games and has the best record, they should have home field at edge, just like other sports. So I think it's great the way they've finally gone back to where it should be. And hopefully the players will look at the All-Star game as an honor, and they want to beat the other league. You should play to win no matter what circumstances you're in.
I think they will, and I think they do. And, you know, they don't call it the Midsummer Classic for nothing. You look at the NBA All-Star game, I find it entertaining. You know, I don't mind watching the dunks and guys shooting from half court, but it's not a real basketball game. The NFL Pro Bowl is a joke. The NHL All-Star game, they're playing 3-on-3 right now. The baseball All-Star game has always been the purest of them all, and baseball is an individualistic sport, and, you know, we got a lot of alpha males out on a field. Nobody wants to be embarrassed, right, Fred? I mean, that's a big thing that I hear from guys in an All-Star game. I don't want to be embarrassed in front of the world and in front of my peers.
You know, that is a great motivating factor for just about any athlete. I mean, if I'm facing a guy like Randy Johnson, you know, coming from the side of, from the left side and throwing 100 miles an hour, I don't want to be embarrassed. I want to hit this guy in front of everybody. So, you know, baseball is a little bit unique. I mean, the NBA, you brought that up, they don't even play defense. And baseball, as soon as you step into that batter's box, I mean, your livelihood is at stake. If the guy lets one get away and it hits you, you better be on your toes. You better be aware of what the heck is going on because you could get hurt. So, and you don't want to be embarrassed. And I get that. I really do. I mean, that's a strong motivating factor for these guys.
Or you just do like John Kruk with Randy Johnson and just step back.
Yeah, you know, I like Johnny a lot, but I didn't care for that.
You didn't like you know, that. I didn't. Yeah, you know, I would understand why. You're right. You're in the All-Star game. Use your at-bat, right?
That's right. To dig in, all right? This guy, all right, fires went over my head. Okay, I'm gonna call time, and I'm going to dig in. I'm going to let you watch me dig in. And then I'm going to grind away and hopefully hit one right through the box.
Now, one thing that is a big difference, obviously, with the All-Star game then and now is interleague play. Interleague play wasn't in play then. And, you know, as a 12-year-old, one of the greatest memories of my life, going, my grandfather, may he rest in peace, was to the All-Star game at Olympic Stadium in Montreal. And I had an opportunity to see you play, and it was great. I saw you guys take on the great outfield of the A's with Armas and Henderson, et cetera. Out there at Fenway. So, but that was my really only exposure to American League players. I'd never seen Rod Carew play in my life. And you know, Fred, you know, it was the Saturday baseball game of the week. Now guys are spoiled. You see everybody. I was like, wow, I've never seen Reggie Jackson in real life before. And that was a big thrill. I was like, I can't believe it. I'm in the right field bleachers. There's Reggie Jackson. There's Rod Carew. There's Fred Lynn. You know, there's Jim Rice. It was really a big deal. Was it the same way for you guys, I imagine, as well? You never saw these guys in the National League. You didn't play them.
No, you're exactly right. I mean, that was that is a great point as far as interleague play is concerned. You know, do you water it down? But then you look at it and say, well, we have these geographical rivalries which take advantage of that. You know, if Pittsburgh plays Philly and that, all those kinds of different things. But you're right. In my day, there was the National League and the American League. Each had its own president. Each had its own set of baseballs. Each had its own set of umpires, different rules. We had the DH. They didn't. So it was very competitive against those guys. In fact, Lee McPhail, who was the president of the American League during most of my time, he would call us up individually. Ready, we got to win this game. It's in Yankee Stadium. It's the biggest show on earth. We got to win this game. And so he's given us a pep talk individually. So, yeah, it was a big deal. And did we see those other guys? No. You either saw them in an All-Star game, maybe in spring training, or the playoffs, World Series time. That's the first time I saw the Big Red Machine and Johnny Bench and those guys was in the World Series. So
that's a bad time to see them.
Yeah, same thing applies to the All-Star game. It was a big deal. Okay, we're facing Schmidt and Garvey and Bench and all those dudes. And you never see them before. So it was fun, but it was very, very competitive.
You know, and it's funny you say that, too, because, you know, unfortunately, and I'm from Montreal, I don't live there anymore, but great memories with the Expos. And I was talking with Tim Wallach about this yesterday. People are like, oh, Montreal's not a baseball town. You played in that game 1982. The electricity
in
the air, Steve Rogers starting, Gary Carter, Tim Raines, Andre Dawson. People in Montreal still talk about that All-Star game, Fred.
Yeah, that was, you know, I didn't, as a player, I didn't like that stadium because it was so cavernous. As a hitter, you looked out, and all you saw was just a gigantic black hole. There was no background at all. It just looked like you're hitting in the Grand Canyon, and I said, dang, this place is big. It looked like it was 500 feet to center field.
That center field, the turf was pretty unforgiving. That was concrete out there, man, too.
Yeah, and it was just so big, and I'm thinking, man, I'm glad I don't play here. And it was dark. You know, I was never a big fan of indoor baseball anyway,
yeah, yeah.
But I thought, if I'm an expo, I bet they have a real home field advantage because they would get used to it, and the other teams, it takes you a while to get used to playing indoors. So, and of course, they had a really good team then, too.
Did you dislike the Kingdom, too? Did you not like domes?
No, I just was not a fan of indoor baseball. I hit well there. I hit well in the Metrodome and some of these other places, but it just didn't feel right. You felt like you're coming into the dugout, you look at the field, you felt like you're going into your living room or something.
I know. I was at a game the other day. It was actually the Red Sox against Toronto on Canada Day, and it was started out sunny. They had the roof open. You know, it was a beautiful day. It was a little overcast. Next thing I know, they closed the roof. Like you said, I felt like I was in a shopping center. Right? That's what I told my friends. I'm like, no, we're not at a baseball game anymore. Like, we're at the mall, and everyone's eating food, and there's food courts. And it was like the game was secondary or something.
Yeah, you know what? I'm sure there was a big mood swing when they closed the roof down. It's like, oh, no, it's the middle of winter. We have to go indoors. I just don't care for it. I believe baseball should be played outdoors unless you're in a climate where you can't do it, like, you know, obviously Miami or Arizona where it's a billion degrees. So you got to close the roof. But anytime you can keep it open, do it.
All right, so the Home Run Derby, there's a lot of excitement about the Derby. And I've been saying this throughout the week, Fred. You know, I was never a huge Derby fan. I was like, it's great for the kids, let them have fun, and I don't have a problem. It's good for the game, and it sells the game, et cetera. But me as a fan perspective, I was never really overly enthusiastic about it. But I can't lie. This year I am because of the young phenoms. If you got a guy like Judge, man, you got Bellinger in L.A., you got these young guys that are just killing the baseball. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Now, they didn't have the Home Run Derby in your days of the All-Star game, but I want to ask you, like, did the guys ever, because like we said, you guys never saw each other, so was it like, oh, man, were the guys in the National League watching Jim Rice, like, plant them over the wall during these All-Star games? And you can admit it now, was there any little side action going on? Like at the All-Star game, at batting practice, hey, let's have our own derby.
No side action, but you know what? It's always fun to watch the big guys hit them a long way. And to be perfectly honest, I really don't go to the Home Run Derby very often, but I might because of Aaron Judge. I mean, this guy is he's bigger than any football player I ever played with at University of Southern California. He's 6'7", 6'8", 280, whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like Frank Howard back in the day.
Yeah.
And this guy hits it a mile. So it would be kind of fun to see if he can hit a 500-footer in Miami and PP.
I got to tell you, you're going back a ways with Frank Howard. And you know what? We had John Miller on the program, and I asked him, it was Gary Thorne, excuse me. It was Gary Thorne. And I said, Gary, you know, they were playing the Yankees that day. I said, with Judge, I said, who does he remind you of? I said, he's almost like Frank Thomas. He goes, no, another Frank Howard.
Right.
Yeah, another guy. Man, so, and you know, if you look at Judge, too, he doesn't have to wind up. It's almost like golf, though, isn't it, Fred? And you were a great hitter, you know, over 300 home runs. You're a great hitter. When you tried, is it like golf, like in a home run, it's got to be a nice, smooth swing. It's about the sweet spot and the point of contact as opposed to the violent swing, isn't it?
Well, you know what? With a guy like me, he outweighs me by 100 pounds, right? So with a guy that big and strong, he knows all he has to do is make pretty good contact. He doesn't need to square it up. If he squares it up, it goes 450 to 500. If he misses it a little bit, it might still be a home run. In my day, if I didn't square it up perfectly with pretty good force behind the swing, it might have gone to the warning track because the ballparks were bigger and, you know, the balls were a little softer. So everything had to be just right. It doesn't have to be just right for these guys today because a couple of reasons. The guys throw harder, the ballparks are smaller, and the hitters are bigger and stronger. So they don't try to pull the ball. They just try to square it up a little bit and gone.
All right, so I wanted to ask you about the current Red Sox right now. It's interesting, actually. Dennis Eckersley, actually started the All-Star game in 1982, that game in Montreal. But I bring it up right now because of David Price. And, you know, David Price, high expectations, I get it, big contract. And he's actually not pitching poorly. He's been pretty good since he came back from his injury. Yet he seems to be feeling the pressure right now. He's arguing with local media. He doesn't want to talk to anybody ever. Somehow he got into it with Dennis Eckersley, and it wasn't just reports. It's been confirmed. Him and Eckersley had words, and supposedly it was more Price just chewing out Eckersley in front of everybody on the plane. And I just find it weird because Price has always been a happy-go-lucky guy, and I wonder what it is. Is it the pressure of Boston getting to him? I know it's, you know, the media can really grind you there, and it can be on top of you. But we're talking about a ball club that's won 8 of their last 10 games. I mean, you know, I remember 6 weeks ago they were talking about firing John Farrell, and ownership had to tell everyone chill out. It's still early in the year. You know what? I don't understand the pressure with Price right now, but you understand this city better than anyone.
I do. Here's what happens sometimes. I'm not saying that it's happened in this particular case, but when guys come from small markets, say Tampa or like a Minnesota or maybe somewhere in the Midwest where there's not a whole lot of media pressure, and then you go to a place like Boston or New York, it's a different stage. And if you get a lot of money to come there, now they put pressure on you, but you put it on yourself as well. You want to do well anytime you get some big bucks and you go to a different team, especially a contender. So a place like Boston, I've seen this happen numerous times where guys could be all world in another league, come from a little smaller market, come to Boston, and it eats them up. I'm not saying that's happened with David Price because he's pitched pretty well, and lately he's pitched really well. So maybe there was something to that, the sore arm deal or the elbow. Anyway, he looks pretty good. But, I heard about the thing with Eckersley, and I'm not sure exactly what went on. But when you're under the microscope and you are in Boston and they expect you to win, they expect you to do well, and when you don't, hopefully you say something to the media. You know, I didn't play well. I didn't have my best stuff. You know, I'll go out there the next time, do the best I can, and support my team, something like that. But if you don't say anything, then speculation runs rampant and, you know, kind of feeds fuel to the fire, and you just, you know, dig yourself in deeper.
Yeah, and especially in Boston. What's the old saying, Fred? You don't pick a fight with people that buy ink by the barrel, right? You're in tough because, yeah, the second you stumble, man, the globe, and they're going to be all over you. Hey, Fred, love talking baseball with you all the time, my man. Thanks a lot for taking the time to be with us. Enjoy the All-Star game.
Yeah, thank you very much, and you do the same.
There's Fred Lynn with us. I always love talking baseball with the greats. We'll take a quick break. We'll talk football with a great. Me, next, Chargers.
It's the summer, but you can already feel the howl of the winter wind. You don't want to go to the beach. You want to break out that heavy coat and head for the stadium parking lot because nothing makes you feel warmer than football season. But you don't have to wait for the calendar to flip a few times at rotoexperts.com, where fantasy football season has already started. The award-winning team at Roto Experts has you ready for the new campaign with the return of the exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package for 2017. Packed with tons of in-depth insights from the industry's top experts, we get you fully prepared for a championship campaign with a deluxe draft package that includes projections, strategy articles, sleepers, busts, a cheat sheet generator, and so much more. And you're guaranteed additional access throughout the regular season. So put your gloves on now, even while it's hot outside, and get into mid-season form. Go to rotoexperts.com and register for the 2017 Exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package. Enter code FREERADIO at checkout for a very special discount.
All right, it's time to talk some Charger football. L.A. Charger football. All right, I got to talk really fast here. Unfortunately, I don't have as much time to pull this off as I would like, so let's jump right in here. It's kind of sad, isn't it? It's kicking in for real that they're not in San Diego. San Diego. Superchargers, San Diego. Maybe the greatest sports theme song of all time, and it's dead, man. It's dead. But let's be real. The fact of the matter is, the Chargers really didn't have a dominant home field advantage. Let's not wax poetic about the city of San Diego. It sucks you lost your team, but it is what it is. Fact of the matter is you guys were 3-5 on your home field the last 2 years. The last 3 years, you're only 11-13 in San Diego. The fact that it was that visiting teams, fans often took that stadium over. People in San Diego were laid back. You're playing in Los Angeles right now. You're playing in a stadium that only holds 30,000 people, but it's going to be a loud and an intense 30,000 people. The distractions of whether you're leaving, whether you're staying, what the future of the franchise is, are completely gone right now. The Chargers, I think, have a path to success this year, despite the fact that they have a very difficult schedule. They were much better than their 5-11 record would indicate. And in fact, they lost the second most manpower games to injury last year in the National Football League. The Chargers were just cursed last year, not to mention that coming out of the gate with the 1-4 record and all those blown leads and the close games that they lost, they just managed to lose games early last year. McCoy played it too safe to the vest, and it ended up costing him his job. Don't forget, Joey Bosa was a holdout. You look at the impact that Bosa had on the defense when he arrived. Coming into the year, they're 66-1 to win the Super Bowl this year. They're 28-1 to win the AFC. They're plus 450 to win the AFC West. And I'll tell you what, I think they're going to be right there. They're going to be right in the mix. But what I like even better is the win total. It's only 7.5 games. The offense is all about Phillip Rivers. We know this. But Phil's not getting any younger, man. He's 36 years old, and he's showing signs of age right now. Yeah, he threw 33 touchdown passes, but he also had 21 interceptions, man. 21 interceptions, way too many. That's Ryan Fitzpatrick-like, all right? He didn't have a lot to work with. You know, he's getting up there. There was a lot of, like, sort of balls he just sort of threw up there to get rid of, and they ended up getting picked off. I do think right now with Anthony Lynn as the new head coach, that they're gonna be a little bit more committed to the run. Now, Phillip Rivers is 36, gonna be 37 in the year. They're gonna use him, right? They didn't draft Mike Williams out of Clemson not to throw the football a little bit. I get it. Lynn was a running backs coach. But Wisenhunt Hunt is the offensive coordinator. And we've got some talent here. Keenan Allen. Is Keenan Allen gonna be healthy? I wouldn't draft him in a fantasy league, I'll tell you that much. And I think Keenan Allen's overrated. He's good, but he's talked about like he's a mega star. Ooh, Keenan Allen. You know, he's good. I'm not saying he's not good, but he's a 70 catch a year guy. He's not Odell Beckham. He's not Julio Jones. He's a good wide receiver, but there's a reason why they drafted Williams. If Allen and Williams and the other Williams and Benjamin are all there and they're all healthy, Phillip Rivers can have a lot of nice weapons to work with. I do like Melvin Gordon from a fantasy perspective, but he's got to prove that he can stay healthy as well. I was a big fan of Hunter Hurst Henry at the tight end. Antonio Gates just doesn't seem to age very much. Defensively, there's a lot to like here. And you know, that's what I'm saying. Out of what Keenan Allen, though, out of 64 games in 4 years in the NFL, he's played in 38 games, guys. Like, really? You can't put your stock in that. All right, but I do like Mike Williams, and I think Mike Williams at 14-1 has an outside shot to be the rookie of the year, the offensive rookie of the year. I think he really can. I think Phillip Rivers is going to love throwing a ball to him in the end zone. Defensively, you know, they've been soft over the years up front. They're not soft anymore, man. Joey Bosa is a freaking badass, and this guy could be a superstar in the National Football League. You can't run the ball on these guys anymore. They used to be soft up the middle. They only give up 97 yards a game on the ground. Melvin Ingram doesn't get talked about enough as a devastating football player. I've always been a fan of Jason Verrett in the secondary. Gus Bradley is a horrible head coach, but he's a good defensive mind. The win total is 7.5. The schedule is very tricky, man. They've got to play against the AFC East and the NFC East. But when it's all said and done, I don't see how this football team doesn't get to 8 wins, doesn't maybe get to 9 wins, and if everything falls into place, maybe the Chargers shock the world and win 10 football games. Either way, I love it. I'm going over 7.5 for the Chargers. I wish I had more time to talk about them, but I don't.
Hey, fantasy nerds, here's a question for you. What do mozzarella sticks and the Fantasy Sports Radio Network have in common? They're both awesome apps. But seriously, download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app right now and get all your favorite shows and fantasy advice at the touch of a tiny icon on your screen. Snapchat and Instagram aren't going to help you win a fantasy football title, but the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app will. So go get it now on Google Play and iTunes.
All right, let's get to our plays of the day. Let's start off with some CFL action. What does the C in CFL stand for? Well, the Canadian Football League, the Crazy Football League, the Chronic Smoking Football League, and tonight with my pick, the Contrarian Football League. Doesn't make a lot of sense. BC have looked a lot better than Montreal have in the first 2 weeks of the season, but BC have historically struggled over the years. Montreal has been a train wreck the last couple of years. I think they're starting to go in the right direction right now. Chapeldain's doing a nice job. I'm calling an upset special tonight. Don't forget the Dogs are 8-0 against the spread this year. And also, I think it's going to squeeze over the number just barely. Red Sox, Rays, under the number. Orioles and Twins, burials, man, burials. We got the Dodgers at minus 165. Why not? And let's go under 7.5. May the winners be yours.